Do college savings accounts really save you a lot of money on taxes? We're going to talk about that coming up on the show next.
From the streets of San Antonio, straight to your wallet, it's Jake's 2 cents on Jake of All Trades.
All right, welcome back. My name is Kirk, and I'm not a financial expert.
But I'm Jake, and I am the financial expert. And together, Kirk and I talk about financial planning, we talk about the economy, and we look at financial concepts, all with the express purpose of helping our listeners build wealth both today and into the future.
And speaking of the future and the past and the present and college, which is, you know, everybody's past, present, and future, I guess, what should we do with the college savings plan? The question, so this only applies to parents, correct?
Who are anybody who's, yeah, parents, grandparents,
or grandparents,
anybody who wants to save some money for somebody else's college in the future.
Unless you're like 20 and you're like, in 20 years, I want to go to college. So I'm going to save for my own college and
sure.
a college, which I guess you could do.
You could, you
know, at 40 technically, sure. but generally it's thought of as parents, grandparents who want to save for, or guardians who want to save for their children or grandchildren.
And so of course, you know, they're just with anything else. There's a multitude of ways that you can accomplish that goal. But, and some of those ways that you do it can help, they have benefits to it, some tax benefits, some investment opportunities, but it's kind of confusing. And so I deal with this a lot when it comes to college planning, and it can seem straightforward, but there's some nuances, some subtle nuances that you have to think about when you're approaching college saving from the perspective of where am I going to put my money to make sure it's for the right thing at the right time.
Now, just to be clear, is it when you say college savings plan investment, is there like some special category tax wise of like putting together a mutual, like an investment portfolio that's for college that, you know, like how, you know, retirement has its own kind of category. Mm-hmm. Or is it just something that you categorize for yourself in your stock portfolio and say, this is my college savings plan for my kids. Right. And that's
right.
So it's just like a personal categorization, or is there other categories that apply?
There is definitive categories based on types of accounts. So just like your 401k is set up to provide you with an efficient way to save money to be used when you're old, there are accounts that are set up to efficiently use your money to invest to be used when your kid turns 18. And so those accounts would actually be categorized in your financial plan, in your portfolio, as exclusively for college saving. And that's really where the meat of this discussion comes in. How much do I want to let go of assets for the future benefit of my children's college versus how much do I want to retain in my control with the idea that in the future, I might use some of these to pay for college, but I never earmarked them specifically for that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, kind of. So I guess so that's the question that you're asking, or that people will ask about their, you know, insurance is because you could save a lot on taxes by, you know, putting money into that college savings account or plan.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so that's like, how much do you do with that?
Right.
Or should you do that?
Right.
Yep. So is it a fact? Is it a fiction that you can save a lot? Right.
Yeah. So in this instance, it is a fact. You can save a lot of money in a very tax efficient way by using these college funding tools. So the two primary ones that are the most relevant today are something called a 529 plan or something called an UTMA, U-T-M-A, which
like
is
that.
A trust account. Yeah. So those are the two primary.
UTMA,
what did you say?
I don't like that. UTMA. Come on.
UTMA. Yeah.
Yeah. It sounds like a curse word. Like UTMA. Hey.
Hey.
UTMA. Get out of here, UTMA. It's like, I don't know.
Right. It does kind of sound like that. I never really thought about that, but it totally
UTMA.
Does.
So, yeah. Okay, I'm sorry, I distracted you. So it was Atma and 529s.
529s.
Those are the two categories I was asking about earlier that are plans, and they can save you taxes.
Totally.
Right. So if I, just to be clear, like if I put money, if I put, you know, $200 a year on starting at year one in an Atma for 20 years, what will that do?
Well, so
tax wise, like how much will I get paid?
Tax wise, this is where the tax wise piece is super beneficial, because what you do is when I put that $200 into the Atma or the 529, I buy investments with it.
Yeah.
And those investments grow. All of that growth, I don't have to pay any taxes on.
So the growth, you don't have to pay taxes
on. Correct.
But the original money, you do?
Right. Yeah. So you don't like receive a tax deduction for putting the money into the college funding account, but get tax free growth on earnings.
Let me try to understand this better. So,
okay.
Let's say $1,000 a year we put in, just to make it easier. Right. So we put in $1,000 a year into one of these accounts, Atma or 529s, mm-hmm. For 20 years is the plan to put it in for, you know, kids.
Mm-hmm.
So, what is that? $20,000
of for over that year for $1,000 a year. Yep.
So that's $20,000 that I put in.
Mm-hmm.
Now let's say it's now worth $100,000. So we gained $80,000 over, I don't know if that's realistic, but whatever, just for purposes,
probably not, but we'll keep, we'll use that for, because it's simple math. Yeah.
So let's say $100,000. So if I were to take out all $100,000 or start paying college with it for my 20-year-old or 18-year-old, and maybe I planned 2 years before they were born. I'm starting to plan now. I don't have, you know, a girlfriend, but man,
we're going to start saving for college.
And, you know, got to make it happen. I'm going to put that on my Tinder profile. Hey, I have a 529.
529 set up for my future kid.
Savings part, but where's the lady part? all right. Scratch. I'm going to edit that out. Just kidding. Okay. So I put
that $100,000.
Yeah. The $100,000 up to 20 years. Let's say they go to a college that costs over 4 years, about $100,000, you know, just to keep math simple with everything included, including lodging, let's say, which is not true at all, but let's just say that. So they start taking that out. How much do they actually get of that $100,000?
All of it.
So when I put in the $1,000, was it taxed?
Sure. It was, because that $1,000 probably came from your paycheck, or, you know, you received that money and then you decided to save
it. That's post-tax.
So it was already
dollars.
After tax. Yeah. It's post-tax dollars. But the earnings, right, that $80,000 that you earned on the $20,000 that you put in, would typically, if it wasn't inside of this 529, it would be taxed, because that was appreciation, that was a capital gain, and you pay taxes on capital gains. But because it was strategically positioned inside of this 529 for the exclusive purpose of paying for school, I avoid paying the capital gain on that $80,000, thereby saving me roughly 15% of that $80,000, which I'm not great at math in my head, but it's a lot of money.
Oh, it's thousands of dollars, but for the $100,000. But okay, so what if my kid decides not to go to college?
Bingo. Now you hit the nail on the head. This is where this strategy can fall apart. Okay. And I've seen it fall apart. If they don't use the money for college expenses, and to be clear, it's not just like tuition and fees. It includes
housing
under certain requirements, like room and board, a new computer, supplies, books, all those things. So it's relatively broad.
Inside joke. Bribing teachers. I'm just kidding. Because you know the big school scandal. The big school scandal. I'm just kidding. Don't bribe your teacher.
I wonder if any of those came from any of that money came from 529. That would be interesting to do some research.
How do you do taxes on bribing your teachers and your school administrators? All right, just joking.
So if the kid doesn't go to college, and I have all this, I have $100,000 saved in my 529, and little Johnny's like, whatever, I want to go live my life. I'm going to go tour the world.
I want to be an artist.
Yeah. And not get a degree in it. That's unnecessary. Then I have to take, and I want to use that money for something that's other than a college expense. Now that $80,000 is taxed, okay, and there's a 10% penalty on it.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Damn.
Right.
So sorry, kid. I ain't saving nothing for you then, because I don't even know if you're going to exist yet. So yeah, like, that's crazy. So that's a lot of pressure on a kid.
It can, you know, be
like, or parents might put some pressure on their kids to like, hey,
you've got to go to college.
Right? I don't want to go to college. I want to.
We earmarked $100,000 of our wealth for you to go to college, and now you're telling us you don't want to go. And so now we're gonna, like, we don't know what to do with this money.
How do you make that decision as a parent? Like, should you save into this? Because personally, I would not. Like, I'm way anti-college, as you know now. Mm-hmm. In terms of, like, unless you're going to get like an engineering or a hard science or an account, you know, finance degree even.
Yeah.
But like, if you're in the humanities, I'm just, you know, because having just paid off all my school loans with money that was not really made in my industry exactly. I mean, kind of, uh-huh, I guess, but yeah, I mean, I just, how do you make that decision as a parent that has a kid, so, like a baby? Yeah. Oh, I have a baby. You're the baby. I'm going to make you go to college in 10 or 15 years or whatever.
Yeah.
Oh, poor baby.
So there's a couple of things that have helped make this decision a little easier for parents. One is part of the 2017 Tax Cuts and Jobs Act was that they expanded the usage of $529 dollars to be used for like private schools while the kid is growing up. So elementary or secondary school, you can also now take some amount out to be paying for that kind of tuition. So that can give a little more support to say like, okay, well, you know, even if they don't use it for college, maybe we want to send them to private school. We have some money set aside for that. So that expands your capacity a little bit. Okay. The other thing that they did was now, because something that also can happen is you raise a prodigy and he or she reaches college time and they have a full ride scholarship, right? Mm-hmm. That's in an ideal world. Well, now 529s, you can, depending on the amount of dollars received in scholarship, you can take a qualified withdrawal from your 529 and it doesn't have to be used for college expenses, right? So if I got $10,000 in a scholarship, the parents could take out 10,000 from the 529 and use it for something else, but it wouldn't be taxed or penalized. So that helps too a little bit. But the primary thing that I do for clients when we have this conversation is, look, it's about the goal, number one. So if you're very passionate about college and you really want to be, know in your mind that part of my plan incorporates setting aside money specifically to encourage my kid to go to school, then we need to forge ahead with a 529 because all things considered, it's typically the most efficient way to save. That being said, when we do the calculation to determine how much we need to be putting in, right? Because that's part of the, the conversation too, is like, do you want to pay for just tuition or do you want to pay for all of their expenses plus room and board? Well, that's going to determine how much I'm putting away every month.
Yeah.
So a good compromise so that we hopefully stave off the risk of accumulating too much in the 529 and then getting penalized is that we come to a compromise and say, okay, I'm comfortable putting away enough to reasonably pay for tuition and fees for 4 years of college. If I reach that time frame, now I probably have maybe half of what I would have had in my 529.
Yeah. So 50 versus 100,000, let's say.
Right. Yeah, so now I have a decent amount so that if they want to go to a trade school or they want to do something else.
Wait, so it wouldn't count with trade schools?
It could still count for trade schools. Oh. Yeah, it definitely counts for trade schools. But if we had done, you know, an analysis way back when they first started and we were just being a little more practical with what the costs were going to be and what we were trying to cover, we have less risk that I'm going to have money that can't be used and subsequently penalized. And so I come to a resolution with my clients to say, all right, maybe it's more reasonable that at that time, you'll probably be earning more money, hopefully, right? This is 18 years in the future. So hopefully your income will be a little higher. Maybe you will have accumulated more savings. And so the potential to pay for some college expenses out of other savings or out of cash flow is probably going to be higher than it is today when you're two 30-year-olds with a newborn baby, right? And so that's how we can back into a little more of an appropriate savings rate while still using the very powerful tax benefits of college savings accounts without overburdening the child or overburdening yourself by tying up too much of my money into college savings accounts.
Hmm. That's interesting. So, yeah, so it's part of your overall strategy that you talk about the risk,
right.
risk assessment and risk evaluation of what, how much risk you're willing to take. Hopefully you're not going to, you know, make it such a big deal that your kid is going to be guilted into doing something they don't want to do.
Right.
Which puts pressure on, you know, the parent child relationship. And it's not good to do that, I think personally, but you know, so you can kind of assess like, okay, so my kid decided not to do this. I could use some, you know, maybe I learned this when they were 12. So I started putting them in private schools that are more for arts because they want to be a filmmaker and they don't think they need to go to college for that. So we could, you know, whatever. And then I could start spending some of it on that. And then there's also the risk assessment that you talked about with how much you're going to be making in the future, hopefully, versus how much you're making now. And yeah, you're going to be stuck maybe with a penalty and taxes, but it'll be on a smaller number than otherwise, you know, because we can put some of that money into other things.
Right.
For investments and things like that.
Exactly.
So it's basically just a risk, what's it called? Risk something calculation, risk.
Risk management risk calculation. Management,
yeah. Something like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Exactly. And then, so last question for me is, can this, so you mentioned trade schools and you said, you know, if they are 18 and they want to go to a trade school, this does count for that as can?
Yep. Yep.
Okay. Now, what other things? So let's say Kirk Barbera, that's me, decides to start a school, right? Like I have already a literary canon club. Let's say I want to start, you know, and I do courses. Let's say I want to do a humanities thing, right? Where I am training kids in the humanities. So I work for an organization, a nonprofit that does this actually, like legitimately, you could spend like, you know, we have graded students. We have 100 students right now at the Ayn Rand Institute, and they're learning from PhDs and they're getting actual philosophy courses, science, physics. And, you know, like we have a guy who's got a PhD in physics. He's teaching physics in philosophy. So we have all these different things. So let's say a parent wanted to spend on something like that, where it's not accredited though. Right. So it's not like going to University of Colorado. It's, you know, like Kirk's University, right? Or the Ayn Rand Institute or something like that. And so I'd just be curious, like, can that money be spent there or not? Do you know that?
So my understanding is that the institution that we are paying with the $529 has to have some form of accreditation because the actual definition on the IRS website as it relates to qualifying 529 expenses is paying tuition and fees at an eligible higher education institution. Eligible being the key word, and I think eligibility is determined by accreditation. Don't quote me on that, but I think there has to be some degree of accreditation in order for it to be a qualified as a higher education expense. That being said, what happens is because when we fast forward to that point where like, I'm going to use this money and I'm going to use it to pay for tuition for these ARI courses, right? That you're talking about. They're not accredited. However, I'm going to use it anyway. The reality is that you're going to take the money out of the 529 and you're going to pay for the classes and you're going to take the classes and then you're going to get a tax statement from the company that holds the assets for the 529. And then it's up to you when you file your taxes to input what those expenses were used for, right? Mm. So if I put it in there that I used it for tuition for higher education courses and I put the institution, it's then up to the IRS to verify that. So it depends on if the IRS actually went through, not that I'm saying it's a good idea for you to start using it for expenses that may not be at accredited institutions. Yeah. You need to follow the rules. But the reality is that it's not like there's a, you know, they won't give you the money unless you tell them this is where I'm using it for kind of thing. The money is yours to use. You have to report it on your taxes. And then if you were audited, they would come back and say, well, this institution is not, doesn't qualify. So you're going to be assessed the tax and the penalty. Mm. That's how it would work.
Yeah. But it's an interesting question about the 529s. Like if the laws, you know, like what was in the previous administration, like you said, they expanded it to schools.
Yeah.
Because, you know, again, there are, so it might be just an interesting, you know, assessment of the future in terms of one thing that can happen with this type of thing in the future with 529s and what is it? UTMAs?
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 UTMA.
UTMA. Where, you know, there are like ARI is just one of these types of things. There are a lot of these, like a lot of organizations doing this. It's not just, you know, ARI. There's hundreds of organizations starting their own kind of pseudo, you know, school, and they offer very good, you know, there's a lot of people with higher education degrees from a traditional school that are just out in the market.
Yeah.
Right. Because they're not getting hired by schools because there's just too many of them.
Sure.
And so there's a lot of people with masters, with PhDs. You know, I've talked about this when I was looking for jobs at like even a private school as a teacher, as a literature teacher, it's like almost impossible without a master's degree because there's so many people with PhDs and masters that's a minimum. It's like getting a bachelor's now.
Yeah.
Like it's just a minimum requirement to get a job in a private school, for instance, not in a public school, but at a private, you know, K-12 school, especially like 8-12. But the point is that, you know, that as the market in education shifts, 529s maybe will be opened up to some of these other ones, or, you know, maybe there's a way that organizations like ARI can get, eligible,
like qualify as a qualifying
without being this, you know, without being a traditional University of Texas San Antonio type of
place, right?
Which probably has higher, and maybe they don't qualify to get funds from the government like UTSA, but they qualify for something like this,
right? That somebody can use their $529 dollars to pay for. Yeah, and I think that makes a lot of sense, and that would, I am optimistic because of how they have changed the quality, like what's available just so far since they've created 529s in the 90s. They've already changed a lot of the dynamics. They used to be a lot more restrictive and they've become a lot more open. And I'm hoping that becomes more and more of a thing, because it really is, to the point of this episode, it is a fact that it will save you a tremendous amount of money on taxes. And it's a very smart way to accumulate wealth for educational purposes. So I hope that they do continue to expand that. And I don't do this episode to say like, stay away from them or always be cautious that you're locking yourself into something. Just be smart about it, but know that this is a really great tool. And I'm hoping that we'll accomplish things just like what you just described as the dynamic of higher education evolves in the country, in the world, really.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's, you know, like you said, if you can take that $100,000 and use all of it tax free, essentially, that is an amazing amount of money.
Benefit. Yeah.
You know, that's thousands of dollars that you can now, I mean, you know, it could be a whole semester of tuition and
exactly books, basically. That would have gone to taxes.
So it's a big benefit. So yeah, it's definitely a big thing. We talked a lot about some of the negative downsides, but really it's a very positive thing overall. 529s and UTMAs, despite the name. that can be good for, you know, that could be good for this.
For saving like this. Yeah. And 529s in particular, not UTMAs, but 529s, they can sort of live in perpetuity. So if you reached that point and you had a large chunk of money that wasn't used when the kid went through college.
I can go to college. Like, you don't want to go to college. I'm going to go get my PhD.
Exactly. You can change the beneneficiary to be somebody else. You can change it to be yourself. You could change it to a grandkid. So yeah. there is opportunities for that money point. To continue yeah. as well. So
yeah.
like, really good, wanna, very solid planning technique. But again, don't just assume this is the right thing to do and I got to put yeah. in a bunch of money into it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
All right, guys. Well, that wraps up this episode of Jake of All Trades. Be sure to check us out on social media by searching for @Jake's2Cents and check out the blog at jakes2cents.com. Take care. We'll see you next time.
Securities and advisory services offered through Commonwealth Financial Network. Member FINRA, SIPC, a registered investment advisor. Fixed insurance products and services offered through CES Insurance Agency. Actual performance and results will vary. These interviews do not constitute a recommendation as to the suitability of any investment for any person or persons having circumstances similar to those portrayed. Consult a financial advisor regarding your specific circumstances.